Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! We're still here. We're still at home. We're still doing this crazy Lenten podcast thing. And for those of you that are new to this crazy Lenten podcast thing, which is also a crazy Advent podcast thing, and sometimes it's an ordinary time podcast. Yeah. You don't even know.
It's kind of a crazy church drunk thing.
Yeah. We are sometimes slightly too moderately too extremely irreverent in our humor style, bordering on blasphemous and heretical. So if that's not your style, then maybe, you know, just take a break. And we also tend to use our favorite four-letter words in great abundance. Sometimes we even add like some ings on the end, right? There's some gerunding going on,
I like that you're just going to drop your grammar knowledge before warning people about your bad words.
So if you don't like us shitting all over your podcast experience, then
unplug your ear holes.
Look elsewhere for your Lenten experience. But I am Guess here with my co-host Diz, and we tend to start these conversations off with one very important question. Dizzy, what are you drinking?
Woo-hoo. Well, I am enjoying a Guinness. It's not very exciting. It doesn't require any shaking or blending or recipe following. But if you're like me and just bought a bunch of Irish beer last week, you might need to keep drinking it, especially because it's quarantine time. And it's not like I'm running to the store to buy festive booziness like I typically would for a church drunk recording sesh. Yeah. And now you're going to come through for us, though. Don't worry, church drunk listeners. I'm sure Guess has something to share. What are you drinking?
Well, keeping in mind that our good friend Corny put me on bitters restriction for this Lent, which I have been able to hold to. We'll check in on this later. The spicy, I have had to flex the rules from time to time. I'm not going to break them. We'll circle back around to that. But the bitters rule I've been able to hold to just because I really enjoy straight liquor anyway.
dovetails nicely with this time of year.
To hit some of the vast bitters collection, straight liquor works fine. And in this case, I'm drinking like a really Lenty straight liquor, I think. It is a gin. So straight gin, which is not always pleasant.
That's kind of hardcore, yeah.
But Lent, you know, this is craft. This is America's craft distilleries at work right here. It is a Navy Strength barrel-aged gin. Navy Strength.
Is that like a real term, or is that something like this particular gin manufacturer has added to their description?
I didn't Google it. Okay. But it is on their label. Okay. I didn't make it up.
I just was wondering.
And so that then one would ask the question, right? Well, what is Navy Strength? In this case, Navy Strength is 57%. So, you know, a good solid 114 proof.
Yeah,
I did drop an ice cube in there to make it. But for 114 proof, it is quite palatable. It's smooth. The barrel aging helps with that. There's lots of lovely hints of juniper going on and spices. And there's even little effect of vanilla, I'm guessing, perhaps because of the barrel aging.
The barrel, that's smooth vanilla. I like how you're trying to really sell us that this is an actual drink and not you just sipping straight gin. Because, guys, like, he starts out telling me, I've got this great cocktail. Well, it's really just gin. And I'm like, what? Yeah.
It's mostly just gin. Well, I mean, it's not mostly just gin. It is just gin.
You see you.
But it is, it's crap. Gin, so I feel like I feel like I'm under quarantine and not under quarantine. What are we under? Shelter in place. And I feel like I've been under shelter in place for a couple of weeks, and I feel like the world is experiencing a global pandemic, and it's Lent, and if I want to sit in the dark and drink straight gin by myself, I'm allowed.
You are for sure allowed, and I love that your gin was barrel aged and is Navy Strength. I think that's a great thing.
But But I did do some research as well, because I was like, if I were to take this lovely straight gin, 114 proof, and make a cocktail out of it, what would I want to make a cocktail? What cocktail would I want to make?
And in fact, if we were not doing this remotely and I was there, I would make you make me this cocktail and drink it in front of you, even though you couldn't drink it. So really, you're guys, right. This is the drink I would like to be drinking.
Technically, this one I think I could drink, although so it's gin, Campari, dry vermouth, lemon twist. So it's basically a Negroni with dry vermouth instead of sweet vermouth. So like a Negroni except worse, is how I would phrase that, because Negronis. Dry vermouth is vile, and sweet vermouth is from heaven. But we went to Michael P. Foley, and I went to the index, and I looked up gin, and I saw which cocktails had gin, and I started to thumb through them. And I said, actually, this is one, like, I make myself a Negroni quite regularly, so I might try it with dry vermouth and see how it goes. So it's an ounce of gin and 3/4 of an ounce of Campari and 3/4 of an ounce of dry vermouth and a twist of lemon. So no bitters, but I do feel like maybe vermouth kind of falls into that category, like. It's definitely maybe not a bitters, but if I really wanted to extend my suffering, I could say that I'll include vermouths in there.
It kind of falls into the category of like flavors that you would add to drinks, besides like the mixer. Like it's a,
So.
Okay. Well, I would drink that. And who's it in honor of? Like, is it, what's the thing that, you know, what's like, connected
so
to?
It's called the Cardinal, and it's in honor of Blessed John Henry Carl Newman, because when Michael P. Foley wrote the book, Blessed John Henry Carl Newman was not yet Saint John Henry Carl Newman, which that happened last year. So
it's one of the new ones.
Yeah, like in the headlines, in the news, a freshly christened saint, if you will, which is kind of cool. And there's this big brown box at the bottom of the page where he's talking about, talks about the life of Cardinal Newman, and the big deal was that he was like a convert. So he was already a big name in like the Anglican Church, and then he converted to Catholicism, which I guess is scandalous. But there's this big box underneath this cocktail recipe that says Last Call. And then it says Newman stands out among the great figures mentioned in Drinking with the Saints because he is the only one on record proposing a toast. And I'm like,
hey,
this is our guy, right?
Yeah.
It says here's the full passage. From his letter to the Duke of Norfolk, certainly, if I am obliged to bring religion into after-dinner toasts, (parentheses), which indeed does not seem quite the thing, (end parentheses), I shall drink to the Pope, if you please, still to conscience first, and then the Pope after.
Ooh, burn.
And then Michael P. Foley starts to kind of explain that in some circles, that remark is taken as like, an excuse to follow your conscience instead of the church, right? Like, well, if Saint Newman does it, then anybody can do it. But in reality, Newman was kind of a very, like, he was an academic. He was he believed that a conscience had to be fully formed with, proper So he was saying, well, your conscience should be formed by, but it still does take precedence over the Pope, right? Like if it's formed properly in the teachings of the church, then you drink to your conscience first. So that's kind of interesting. And then on top of that, I thought it was sort of fascinating. They said that even just the very beginning of it, right? So if I'm obliged to drink to bring religion into after dinner toasts, which doesn't seem like it's quite the thing, right?
Quite the thing.
Well, I don't know if that's him saying like, well, I think it's wrong to bring religion into these toasts. Or is he being like, listen, if we're going to drink, let's just fucking drink, right? Like, let's do this properly and then we'll talk religion after we've had a few, So I don't know.
It's kind of a yin and yang. We think being intoxicated.
It says your speakers are muted.
Oh, shit. I can hear you.
What do I do? You're talking, but I can't hear you.
I just clicked it and unclicked it.
Oh.
Can you hear me now?
I'll just keep talking.
You're coming in and out.
I can hear you. I know. It says that you're muted.
I'm not. I'm not muted.
Is sending me text messages now.
I'm looking at them.
Hit the button on your little, like, I don't know, is like one of those little button things. my emoji thing is just going.
It says you're recording the call on my end.
Okay. All right. I think we solved the technical difficulties, and that means that we're back. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Great. Yeah. So
you're at least on my end, you're a little muffled. Try pulling your little microphone thing out a little further. But there we go. I think we're good.
Hello.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that hello? Better?
Great. Perfect. So I think the moral of the story was St. John Henry Cardinal Newman, great at a dinner party. And B, I'm just drinking straight gin because quarantine.
And I think we were saying that we like to be drunk and talking about religion, but it might not be quite the thing for everybody. Because, you know, opinions.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, I mean, I just feel like it puts us on the path to sainthood. If
it certainly helps our unbelief.
I'll tell you that. If there's any dispute at all, whether you're supposed to drink and talk about religion or drink and then talk about religion, if those are the two pathways to sainthood, according to John Henry Newman, then, like, yeah, me too.
Sure. Yeah. Toast to that. Hey, imaginary cheers.
Cheers. Clinks. All right. Yep. So speaking of like imaginary things and distance drinking and distance spirituality, I think that's kind of like where we're going to, we already did an episode like at the very, very beginning of this kind of coronavirus weirdness where we were together and we were saying, you know, like from here on out, we may have to be like together, but apart. And that was both to you and I and to everybody else. And then we did our sort of drinking with the saints, as is customary around St. Patrick's Day. But we had kind of a big layoff since then, because that was on a Tuesday that we recorded that, and we posted it later that week, and now we're doing it at the end of the following week. And so it's been almost 2 weeks since we've done this, and the world has gone changing quite a bit.
Quite a bit. And I think for everybody, time is just weird right now. Like, I've seen lots of people saying they feel like, what day is it? When is it? What's happening? Because time is weird. Your schedule's off. And it's true for everyone. Maybe you're logging more screen time and less, like, real people time. Like, you no longer have to, like, be places.
Right.
So I think we just have to acknowledge that that's weird. And
yeah. And for us, you know, I mean, it's a very minor thing in the grand scheme of things. But we like to do these on Friday or by Friday during Lent, because Friday's kind of, you know, like it's a very Lenty day. Yes. And I feel like that rhythm.
When is Friday?
Lent has just, it's really gone out the window.
Totally.
Part of that because of just the hierarchy of needs, you know, like thinking about what day of the week it is so you can do your goofy churchy podcast thing. is not high on the list of priorities. And also, because everybody's routine has been so interrupted. But we do want to keep doing it so that anybody who listens can still Lent along with us. So
we've gone so far.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're actually close to the end of Lent, which is always kind of a bit of a panic for me. 'Cause I'm like, oh, I haven't quite done all the Lenten things I really actually want to do because I've been, you know, drunk or complaining for a couple weeks. There's really just that sweet spot of those third and fourth weeks where you really need to get it together.
Yeah.
So this is technically like the fifth Sunday of Lent and Passion Sunday, which is, you know, kind of sad. It's the day
Gibson Sunday.
It's the day when traditionally all people before and after the filming of The Passion of the Christ.
Watch
The Passion of the Christ.
Yes.
And try to forget about what kind of person Mel Gibson appears to be. Is that the point of it? No?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. That's every Sunday for some people. But, I still want to be able to watch Road Warrior and enjoy it.
No, I mean,
but,
the whole world is turvy.
Yeah, it's been a very odd Lent. And it's been one where, for a lot of us, we've lost the ability to go to church, which is a strange thing.
Yeah, church is closed.
Yeah, and there's some really hard conversations going on right now with church leaders saying, you know, well, can we open for Easter? And you know, health officials saying, like, sorry, but no, you know, like, we're not going to be there yet.
And I don't think you guys are referring to hard conversations being like President Trump saying he wants to see the churches beautifully filled on Easter.
I don't consider him to be a health expert, if that's what you're asking.
No. I'm just saying, like, you said church leaders are having this conversation, and I think they're just freaked out a little bit because ministers of all sorts are like, what do we do when we can't be with our people? Yeah. You know, it's a scary thing for them.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger thing, and I'm sure that most in public would say that the bigger thing is, you know, like the sense of community, you know, and we touched on that earlier on in Lent when we started realizing that we were going to have to do this social distancing thing that, like, you know, we're called to community all the time, and we're called to community, especially in a crisis. And it would be really hard if you're, you know, a priest or a minister who has dedicated your life to building community and to helping people find God's presence. And then Easter, which is really the big day, even though Christmas gets all headlines, you know, Easter is a day that you can't celebrate with not only the people that you see, you know, week in and week out or day in and day out sometimes, but the people who you only see once or twice a year, you know, and that's going to be really hard for them. I think also there's a scary financial component to it where it's a lot of times where when that hat gets passed around, there's more bucks in it on Easter than there is on
all these other weeks where people aren't there and aren't contributing as they might normally be. These are churches have buildings and employees and bills that have to get paid. And I mean, I think that's a legitimate thing to talk about, just like every other.
And I will say, I don't listen to the daily briefings from the White House about what's going on with this pandemic.
Oh, no, why?
No, because they make me feel like I'm going to fill my shoes with vomit. I did happen to be eavesdropping on one of them. And there was our what are we, the coronavirus czar or the pandemic czar, whatever we're calling Mike Pence these days. And usually, I just don't, he's nothing to me, you know, like, I mean, the president fills me with rage. The vice president fills me with like, he's still there.
Yeah.
But he was saying that, you know, like, you know, he's a Catholic and he's a person of faith and he does a lot of things that are faith-based, whether you agree with them or not. So he was kind of talking about that as a passion of his and saying like, it's going to be hard to not fill up the churches. But he did say, like, if you can, then still give to your church, like try and keep those churches going, even though we're not going to be physically present. And I was like, wow, that might be the only thing that he's ever said that I actually agree with.
It's nice to find those little micro overlaps when we can.
But good for you for dropping that in there, because it is important. You know, I mean, a lot of people are worried about local businesses and things like that. Yeah. And that is absolutely of concern. And we've got a couple thoughts tonight about how we might be able to help out with that. But, you know, like if you can send your, you know, the $5 that you would put into the hat, send those to the church remotely or do whatever you can do or make one big donation for Lent and Easter. That's kind of, you know, that's what's going to keep those churches afloat right now.
Yeah. I actually was feeling a bit smug in my giving because our parish did send out a thing being like, so like, if anybody wants to start the online, we do have that option. And Mr. Dizzy and I always do that. And I'm always sort of like grumpy at mass because they don't give you anything to put in the basket.
Right.
So like, you know, there's this social stigma of like, you're not putting anything in. And we're like, no, like we do. We do even when we're not here, put something in because we do the electronic.
You should just bring like Monopoly money with you to church.
Just drop it in and be like, online. I should something. I just feel like my luck, I'd always get like called out, you know, some old lady would just see me put the Monopoly money in.
How dare you?
I just need like empty envelopes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, go give if you can. Throw some
yeah,
bucks.
I mean, that
any,
is.
Any charity that you would normally give to, they still need you.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So one of the things, rather than doing our typical Friday podcast, which we're now doing on Sunday, we did, at your brilliant suggestion, drop in on St. Peter's Square on Friday.
Yes. I was lucky to just have paid attention and didn't miss it. I feel like that's another thing where, like, you see something's going to happen and then you miss it, or you see it like the day after online.
Right.
Because of all the little algorithms when something might pop up in your feed. But I did see that Pope Francis was going to be hosting or giving this special Urbi et Orbi, right?
Urbi et Orbi,
yeah. City to the World. Blessing that normally only happens twice a year, but on Friday he did it to for the coronavirus specifically.
Right.
And it was streaming all over the place. I think I watched it from the Vatican News YouTube channel, which actually is live streaming his daily masses right now, which is something he's never wanted to do, but feels like it's called for in this time. So, you know, props to our 80-something-year-old Pope Francesco, who is able to adapt the moment with the logic and common sense.
And it was really pretty surreal, you know? Like, I was glad that you had given me a heads up about it and that that I had the time to be able to watch it. And it was, I thought, really beautifully framed, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't... It would be really easy to just, you know, put a couple of folks out there with a microphone and not do the rest of the sort of accoutrement that would go with the prayer service.
It like was that. So stark and stunning.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But they had, I mean, it was raining, so they had to have sort of a little shelter there. But, you know, they had these beautiful, huge sort of like torch cauldron things lit around the square. And they had really thought about the idea that this is a global stage. And that even if there's nobody there to see it, there is everybody there to see it, you know.
Right. And he's, you know, speaking to it empty. And yet he knows he's speaking to all of us. And that's,
And that, I think that struck me in that, that is always the case for the Pope and for, you know, a lot of world leaders that, you know, sure, they're talking to the people in front of them, but they're also speaking to a much larger audience. But how different it looked to see him speaking only to that larger audience and not to the people immediately.
Yeah.
There was nobody there. You know, it was, I told you, I think earlier on that, like, it reminded me a lot of the movie, The King's Speech, you know, where it's there's nobody there to hear it. And yet the whole world is going to hear it. And there's a lot riding on it. You know, I mean, in the case of the Pope, there's not necessarily a lot riding on it in terms of, you know, life or death, political scenarios or anything like that. But what there is, you know, people who are in a position of real spiritual need, you know, there's a lot of questions that can't be answered right now that people have. And for some of them, they're the type of questions that they've either already driven them away from the church, you know, in which case they may not be listening to the Pope. But if they happen to hear it or they happen to see it, you know, like to have the Pope kind of say, hey, you know what, like we're in this together. We are trying to figure this out. There's a lot of fear, you know, which you and I have talked about together, you know, like he called that and said, hey, the fear is what we need to be focused on and understand that God can put our fears at ease. And we have this beautiful gospel story of the calming of the storm at sea, that Jesus didn't have that same fear that the rest of the apostles did because he had more faith, you know. And if you're afraid, it doesn't mean that you don't have faith. The apostles were afraid, but Jesus calmed that. Jesus can bring you to a safer place, you know. It was a beautiful message, I thought.
I thought the message was beautiful as well. I totally agreed with the focus on fear and faith. I think just the imagery of it, like you said, they did a good job setting the scene and having it be beautiful. And just seeing him on his own in the rain and then going up to that special crucifix that has been paraded around Rome at different times of catastrophe and of illness. As a reminder to just the whole people of the world that, like, we get through these things, you know, we do get through, and there is suffering, and that, you know, Christ present with us in the suffering. And I've seen a lot of people online from all camps, from the very conservative to the very progressive, being so moved by the message, but also by his leadership in kneeling in front of that and in adoring and in just being present with all of us that way. I think his message, his words spoke a lot, but I think his presence also spoke a lot, and maybe more to the non-Catholics.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, being a good Catholic that he is, and hearing it as a, you know, somewhat good Catholic as I try to be, the little message of guilt embedded in there, the line where he said, you know, like, how could we live in a planet that is hurting so much and expect ourselves to come out of it still perfectly healthy, was really, I thought, insightful, was really, really revelatory of not only his worldview, right? Because Pope Francis has made it a point to say, we are hurting our world, and in doing that, we are hurting each other. And if we really care for each other, we have to care for our planet. And not only his worldview, but also just kind of the truth of the scenario, right? Like, you know, you see a lot of this, you know, like, scenario playing out, and it's the greatest fears of some people. And, you know, we haven't yet hit that greatest fear level yet, I don't think, right? It certainly is a global tragedy at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's not necessarily like the airborne Ebola that, like, people freaked out about being a possibility a few years back and things like that. But it's pretty bad, you know, and it's indicative of populations that are too dense and people that live in fear and an overall sense of the infallibility that we felt we all possessed not being there, you know, that we're not quite as good as we thought we were. So I thought that was a lovely little extremely Catholic, like, go to confession.
Yeah. By the way, while you're sitting at home, you should think about what are you doing? Well, and I think he gets to say that because he has not been shy about speaking up about the planet and about taking care of it better and how that connects to the poor of humanity as well as the poor environments, you know?
Yeah.
Side note, I was a little concerned about his health. Like, I get worried about him. He's not a young pope, and he did look a bit weak. Like, he had his little guy helping him out there and back and everything. And much like some other people, the notorious RBG comes to mind.
I know, right? Yeah. Some
elderly, like, you know, everyone protect Pope Francis.
Yeah.
Glad the square is empty and nobody's coughing on him. And then it came out like when somebody in the palace at the Vatican City has, or somebody who stays in the apartments that he stays in, maybe was tested positive for the virus. And
yikes.
It's like, yikes. Come on, people.
I know. But I mean, like, and imagine just the stress that he's under as, you know, like being in Italy, which has been kind of the poster child, you know, even though the U.S. has now surpassed Italy in terms of cases and things like that. But, you know, for not handling this appropriately and for having a really major negative impact on the population. And there is Pope Francis in the center of it all, kind of trying to figure out how to stay the course and make it through Lent and bring the gospel message of Easter to the people in the midst of all this suffering. Like, it's got to be a tremendously stressful thing for him.
Totally. And just knowing that, like we were saying earlier, all the churches, all the pastors, as well as all the people are in an unprecedented, difficult time. How do you do this well? But I think he was a good example to us. So a good Pope for this.
Totally. We like to visit our Pope Hope from time to time. So we give a thumbs up to Pope Francis's prayer service on St. Peter's Square. But we both, not necessarily surprisingly, give a thumbs down to – and just a personal thumbs down, not a conceptual thumbs down, but a personal thumbs down to YouTube Mass in place of Sunday Mass. Mm-mm. It just doesn't scratch the itch.
No, and it's just weird. Like, it takes you out of the scene. I mean, I haven't given it a real good chance, I will admit. But even the thought of it, like, I feel like you could do other things.
Right. Well, I would rather, you know, like on Sundays when I miss Mass, which are relatively frequent. I do sometimes try and hit up the readings, right? Like I'll do the readings and be like, you know, well, at least it's like reading the Cliff's Notes of the Mass and be like, what were we talking about today? And, you know, sometimes if I'm really, really on it, I'll read some sort of reflection on those readings, right? Because a lot of times there will be articles posted on like a reflection on the readings for the week, you know, that you can find.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll do that. But I mean, just watching them, like the prayers are beautiful. And actually reading a bit of Nadia Bolz Weber, who's Lutheran, but she talks about how much she loves the liturgy and how like going to like revisiting like liturgy and really for her going to like a Lutheran liturgy for the first time and having the Book of Prayers, you know, she kind of grew up in an evangelical setting. So having like set prayers that are like part of a real sense of ritual spoke to her. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's, but I've also heard him a bunch before. It's like a cradle Catholic.
When we go there in person, yes, it is very comforting. I actually love that very much. Like I can relate to that, but it's just not the same on a screen. And I think like you can read the readings a day. You can also read, I feel like a good swap for like a homily is like, go read something from one of the saints. I think that's a good, you know, swap out for that. It's not going to be the sacrament, but you know what? It's not going to be the sacrament when you watch it on video. I did see from maybe one of the publishers had said, you know, you that reminded us that, you know, that even though we all can't go to Mass, the priests are still saying Mass every day and they're holding up everybody's intentions, whether they know them or not. And I think that's actually a beautiful image to remember and to know that the priests are still offering Mass for us and that, you know, we can send them our intentions or pray for them. And some people are asking for that. Like, that's kind of a lovely thought that even though we're not there, Mass is still happening. And you can, so I'll put on my traditional hat and say, you know, you can offer spiritual communion when you can't do physical communion, which is not something we talk about a lot, but like is an actual thing.
Yeah,
there's like well, there's like a particular prayer for it. I don't have it memorized. I would have to look it up. But I think the intention of joining yourself to those masses counts as much as watching one on YouTube.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this before on the podcast that like when you go back through history, right, the sort of quote unquote mandate that we have to go to Mass on Sunday in our current Catholic culture, not only does it not exist in other countries today, right, because there's not a local parish to go to in some parts of the world. But you go back through history and it was by no means the expectation that the typical peasantry would be going to Mass every Sunday, right? Like it was if you can make it on Christmas and Easter, you are encouraged to do so. But like even that you didn't necessarily have to do, right? Like it was considered to be a pilgrimage that you should make every effort to do to get to the local church maybe a couple times a year. But local had a very different definition than what we see now. And so, you know, like, and we've talked about the fact that that if we continue to have a shortage of priests and nuns, that may be changing.
We're going back to that. Yeah.
So this idea that like, you know, if you're not allowed to even, you know, walk around the corner or drive down the street to get to the local parish, that makes it, you know, not a possibility to be there. So instead you should watch it on YouTube. Like that seems weird to me, right? Like just set aside the Sabbath in your own way, spend some time with God, you know,
totally.
Like you said, there is a rote prayer for offering your spiritual communion, but there's 1,000+ ways to honor the Sabbath, you know?
Yeah. No, 100%.
At least that's what I tell myself when I skip Mass, even though I totally can. So
you're in mortal sin. You need to go to confession. I'm just kidding. No, we're going to give everybody the church drunk dispensation. Like Jess just said, do your best. Take the Sabbath somehow.
I feel like we have to set up a donations page if we're going to start offering dispensations.
Oh, no. I think that's indulgences that they pay for. Which I was not even going to touch with a 6 to 10 foot pole. But everybody was given with like no strings attached, which is kind of unusual for an indulgence. That Pope, I guess whenever they do the Urbi et Orbi blessing, you can get an indulgence. And like a plenary indulgence. And he was offering it for this thing with like no conditions. Cause usually there's like a condition on it. Like you go to Mass within a certain number of days and you say whatever prayer and blah, blah, blah. And like, I barely understand indulgences and I don't think I believe in them. So, but if you do, if you watch Pope Francis, even later, you can go ahead and get yourself one.
It's like being told that you'll, that they'll pull an imaginary, you know, 12-foot tall rainbow colored dragon up to the front of your house. Right. You just got to believe hard enough, but whatever.
I mean, I think they get such a bad rap because of like the Middle Ages. Is that the right time period? Whenever they were just like really abusing, like charging for them. Right. But like the idea of them is just kind of wacky, but like not malicious. You know what I mean?
No, it's not malicious. And it is, it's a particular brand of spiritual practice. Right. And like, I get it, but I don't necessarily need it, you know, like,
no,
I offer myself, I'm never short on indulgences, you know.
You're indulging right now. How's that gin?
Exactly. It's fantastic.
I'll also tell you, guys, guests offered me an indulgence this week because I was being so good in keeping to my corny restriction, which was nothing in my coffee. And I told guests, because he was showing me his coffee that was nice and boozied up, and I was like, oh, I'm not doing that because I lost it. And he's like, dude, alcohol does not count. I'm just going to take that and run with it.
Yeah. Booze does not count in your coffee as like an additive that goes along with milk and sugar. It
definitely did. So I was really happy.
Yeah. They don't need a liquor license to put milk and sugar in your coffee. So they're in different categories.
I understand now. Thanks for that indulgence.
Yeah. Speaking of Lenten promises, it sounds like you're honoring your corny promise very well of milk and sugar.
I drink black coffee now, and I sort of hate it, but I have to do it.
I have stuck to the bitters, and I believe, as we talked about it earlier in the podcast, as I started to go through the catalog of Lenten cocktails, I think I've only opened the vermouth like once, so I can go ahead and add that one to the list.
You have been a straight booze drinker.
Yeah. It's been a straight booze kind of land.
Funny how that goes. Well, yeah. All right.
And I did mention also that I maybe fudged a bit on this spicy. So let's see. There was my mom brought by some, like, they're not like chips, but they're not even like the popped thing, like those little like mini rice cake discs, except they
I'm familiar. Like, I like them,
like amaranth or something. They were these like ancient grains ones, something crazy that she like ordered off the TV. I don't know.
QVC was selling amaranth pop chips.
But they were like sriracha flavored, and so I was like, oh, I'll put those aside until like Easter. Mm-hmm. Right. But now, quite frankly, groceries are a little sparse. All right. And I was like, I'm hungry and I need a snack. God damn it. I'm on quarantine and I didn't buy these. So it doesn't count.
Okay. So. More guesses rules. If you did. Exactly. Well, hey, I've never bought any pickles. They just appear in my fridge. People make them here.
There you go. There's your out. So
were they good? So, yeah. Were they worth it?
It's not cheating if you mean to do it or if you didn't buy it. Those are my two official rules.
Love it so much. Wait,
and then there was also we actually before the quarantine we were having dinner together, and I realized halfway through a meal that I was eating bell peppers, and I was like, oh, these are like, I don't think of those because they're not spicy, right? Like, I don't. And then I, oh shit, these are in the pepper family.
I'll give you a dispensation for bell peppers because the spirit of my law was to rob you of flavorful hot sauce. So I don't really care for you bell peppers.
A very special listener did give us, and by us, I mean me, the recipe to Alabama white sauce, which I did make. Fantastic. And it's delicious. And it's horseradish. Wow. Not pepper family.
I
counts.
I hate this so much because I can't even try the like good like recipes you're making. Like, fuck this ultimate Lent. Quarantine sauces.
Oh, man.
Stuff you didn't buy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been doing pretty well with the black coffee. And the no pickled things is not like, it's not the most difficult I've ever had, but it's definitely like an inconvenience, and it definitely does sort of rob you of a certain little something when you're making certain things, right? Like you're like, oh, like I just wanted black olives in this, or I just wanted pickles in this tuna fish I was going to have for lunch, and now I just won't have it at all.
Like, just throw some celery in there. It'll be like...
It's not
crunchy, but not flavorful.
In there. Yeah. So stuff like that, I definitely notice it, but.
I think it's, you know, like that is the idea, right? Like you're giving something up.
It's
and
a little burp.
I would say, I mean, certainly, I think probably the biggest sacrifice that the two of us are making out of the four things that we're giving up, probably the milk and sugar in your coffee, right? Like that's a different routine and it changes part of like your daily, you know, like hot sauce is tough for me because I eat it a lot, but it's not like every single day. But you know, like in the end, it's really meant to make you be more mindful, right? Like that's part of the purpose of this, right? Like is to just kind of be mindful of the fact that it is Lent and you give up a little bit of something so that you can continue to be like, oh, I am doing a spiritual thing during this spiritual season. So they're serving their purposes in that regard.
Yep. Yep. I'm glad for them. I think they're right kind of down the middle, which turned out to be appropriate for this year, you know?
Yeah.
We might be losing our minds if we had picked harder things.
Yeah. No, I think it was so far so good. When we get back together someday, we'll be able to pick out on spicy things and pickled things and, we'll do Irish coffee,
bitter with things,
cream and, bitter things. Yeah. So we'll get it all done. But also along those lines of when this is all said and done and what people are going to eat, there's a lot of folks that have been talking about, you know, like curbside pickup for local restaurants, things like that, and how we can help out some of those businesses. And so we kind of wanted to end this little episode with maybe a few suggestions that we had heard of or talked about with other folks for number one, how can you do some of that, right? Help out local businesses. Even if you're not necessarily comfortable with curbside pickup, you know, like I know in my case, I've got little baby guests who I don't want to get sick. But it seems like it's not affecting, you know, infants some and toddlers as much as we feared, but I do have, you know, parents that, I worry about, in this whole pandemic thing. So I don't really want to jump out there and do curbside pickup, but one of the things that people, suggested when I was talking to him about that was buying gift cards to those restaurants because that's income that they put into their bank accounts now. And then you can redeem it later on, hopefully when they're doing a better business.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's like that's filling their coffers and hopefully getting them through these hard times. And I thought that was just kind of a brilliant suggestion for how to get people through.
Totally.
So if there's businesses that you want to support that have like online gift cards that you can buy, or if there's restaurants, I thought that was a really cool idea.
Yeah, I think I've heard the same, and it's like good little loans for them. Similarly, as we were saying, like if you're still drawing a paycheck to continue to support your place of worship or your charity of choice, because they are struggling right now. So those are some of the financial things to do. I've seen a lot of the kind of encouragement things, socially encouraging things as well. Right. Were you going to go ahead? That you were going to get one more?
I was going to say that, you know, that volunteerism obviously is kind of a scary prospect right now, but there's still a lot of nonprofits that do rely on volunteers. So if you can get out of the house, right? Like for me, I feel like I don't want to get, you know, like my immediate family sick. Nobody wants to get their immediate family sick, you know, but I think about if this was 10 years ago and my parents were not necessarily as at risk as they are now, or I didn't have little baby guests in the house, you know, like I might be more willing to go out and do some volunteerism or something like that. And there was a blood drive recently in our neck of the woods, actually a couple of them, I think, because people are, you know, obviously not going to be going and giving blood in the same way that they used to. And yet there is a need. So if you're able to do that, I think that's a great thing to contribute to as well.
Yeah, they're always in need of blood. And especially now when less people can go out or fewer people can go out. Also, I've seen kind of similarly for the healthcare workers and things, people just taking stuff to the hospitals or to even their cars, their parking lot, and just like putting stuff out there for them to encourage them because they're so scared and yet working so hard. And I think there's, you know, volunteering in the way of encouraging people kind of is an important thing right now. The other financial one is like the Amazon wish list. I've seen a lot of organizations saying like, we still need donations of supplies, even if people can't come volunteer. So your favorite one might have a Amazon wish list they could use items for.
And one that you can do for free that is, you know, not necessarily the easiest one to do. It requires a little bit of legwork, but one that I've encouraged a couple of folks to do is getting in touch with local retirement homes and try to touch base with whoever, you know, the sort of coordinators are there, people who might be, you know, important people to contact that can that are still interacting with those, right? Because they've been put on lockdown, right? Like there's no visitors, there's nothing. And so if you can send little video messages or if you can send, you know, I mean, like cards are a little dicey just because they're probably not wanting, you know, an influx of people's stuff. Right. But if you can send e-cards, if you can send video messages, if you can send fun little encouragements that are, you know, remotely from your home to those people that are stuck there. Even if you don't know anybody that's in that retirement home, it may help to brighten their day and encourage them because I can't even imagine what it would be like to live in one of those places, to work in one of those places and try to figure out, you know, how are you going to work your daily routine and not have it drag you down. So anything along those lines, like I said, requires a little more research, but it might be a really good thing for somebody, to see and to hear and to feel like they can still interact with the outside world.
That's a good call. Okay. So those are some ways that we could think of. I think, even just amongst friends, like I've seen a lot of that online too. And I think, you can chalk it up under the spiritual works of mercy, like check in on your people and call them up or Zoom them or whatever.
Zoom them. Yes.
Skype them.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because, I mean, it's not funny. It's actually horrible, but you know, like it's ironic, I suppose. We started out this Lent talking about how, you know, prayer and fasting are the two parts that we're really good at, but almsgiving was a challenge for us sometimes, and it wasn't something that we always really focused on very well. And there's just so many opportunities now to do that service component, the spiritual works of mercy, the corporal works of mercy, and the actual just giving of whatever you have to give to try to help people through this hard time.
Yeah, it's going to continue on. So pick something, go do it.
Exactly.
Well,
and for us, we will also continue on. We'll be back next week, ready to rock and roll.
The pre-Holy Week.
It's going to be showtime before we know it. So if you guys have suggestions for things to do for Lent that you want to, you know, have us mention on the podcast, things that are ways that you're reaching out that you'd like to see others do the same, then feel free to let us know if you have songs that you want on the Stations of the Cross that I will be doing this week, I promise.
Okay.
Then let me know. You can email us, churchdrunk@gmail.com.
You can tweet at guests at churchdrunkpod. And of course, go to the website, go to the blog, which is churchdrunk.com.
Yeah, churchdrunk.com. And that's where I'll be posting the Stations of the Cross in the coming days, our Stations of the Cross soundtrack, different song for each one. So that should be a new way to pray. And God knows we need new ways to pray.
So, by yourself, being the
main. By yourself, alone in the dark with a glass of gin.
A lovely gin cocktail, one ingredient.
That is this episode of Church Drunk. We look forward to talking to you from afar next week. And here on Church Drunk, where we have no milk, no sugar, just bitters. Just bitters.
And beer.
And beer. Oh, and gin. And cheers.
Hey, cheers.
Chink, chink. Clinks. All right.